We learned Daf Lamed Ches in Masechtas Nedarim. We are actually just going to start from the bottom line of Lamed Zayin Amud Beis, which is really in the middle of a statement that the Gemara before. The Gemara before was discussing the idea of Mesiris. We were talking about Pisuk Taimim, one of the things that a Rebbe teaches the Talmud, whether he allowed a charge for that, and so on. That was the Sugya on Daf Lamed Zayin. Then the Gemara got into, there are certain aspects of Limud HaTorah which are Kabbalah Halach LaMoshe MiSinai. So we listed, so far, the Gemara right beforehand listed what's considered a Kri V'loi Ksiv, where, in other words, there are certain things that we read even though they are not written in the Torah. And that takes us up to what we're up to right now. The last line is the Ksavon Veloikaryon, and then there are also those things that are written in the Torah. When I say Torah, by the way, I don't mean necessarily only the Torah, so I mean all of Tanakh, that are written in Tanakh. And for whatever one reason or another, we don't actually pronounce them. We don't read them when we're reading them out loud. And so the Gemara gives a few examples, about four or five examples. The Gemara gives like so. No, do yislach. So really, the only way I can really tell you what this is by the pasuk. The pasuk says it's really a long pasuk, but it says v'shtach b'zor beis rimon v'shtach voisi beis rizon yislach Hashem. The way we read it is Yislach Hashem La'avdecha. We leave out the word no, even though, again, for whatever reason, it's written in the Navi. This is a pasuk in Malachim. It's the word no is written in the Navi, but we do not pronounce the word no. Similarly, we'll just go through these examples a little bit quickly. The word Zois Da'amitzvah. Now this one. Now I'm on the top of Lamed Ches Amud Aleph. The word Zois Da'amitzvah. Now this one's very interesting because there seems to be a Machlekes Rishonim which pasuk we are referring to, because the Gemara is really very cursed, very short with this. The Gemara just says the pasuk to Hamitzvah. Now there's lots of psukim in the Torah that say Zois Hamitzvah, but even though the Ran initially says that we're referring to a pasuk in Devarim, and the Torah Or brings one or two psukim from the parsha in Devarim rather that says the word Zois Hamitzvah. But the truth of the matter is, even in conclusion, the Ran himself agrees that we're really referring to a pasuk in Yirmiyah, where it's talking about the famous the pasuk of Sefer HaMikna. Over there also the pasuk in Yirmiyah says the Ekach HaSefer HaMikna as a chosim HaMitzvah HaChukim as a Goloi. So there also it has the word Zois that is written, but we don't read it. What? Yeah. Okay. All right. Fine. Then the Gemara continues and brings another pasuk of Yidroich to Hadroich. This is also a pasuk in Yirmiyah. Now over here, it's interesting because it actually says the word Yidroich twice. Again, if you're a sefer writing the Navi, if you're writing a Tanakh, then you should know that you're writing the word Yidroich twice. Even though when we read it, we only read the word Yidroich once. The word Chomesh, the Pas Negev, again, similar idea. This is a pasuk in Yecheskel where it says the word Chomesh twice. It says Chomesh, Chomesh Meos, but we only pronounce the word Chomesh once. And the word Im, and the word Im in the pasuk of the Chigoyel. Now that pasuk is a pasuk in Rus when Boaz was saying, we do not say, again, we don't pronounce the word Im, we don't read the word Im, we just say, Umnam ki Goyel anoichi. We're referring to Boaz, the fact that he was, not if he was a Goyel, but that he is a Goyel, that he was able to redeem her. Okay, so these are the examples, Kasvan v'loi Kiryon. These are examples of places where in Navi, notice they all, especially if, once you change the girsa of the Ran to the Pasuk in Yirmiyah, these are all psukim in Navi, in Nach, that are written in the Navi, but we do not actually read them. And the Ran does point out that there are many other examples of this, and the Gemara over here is just trying to give us a sample just to show us that the concept does exist. But then the Gemara continues. Amar Rav Acha bar Ava Ada b'marova paskin lahadein psuka letzvasa psukin. in Eretz Yisrael, they used to separate this pasuk into three separate psukim. The pasuk says, "Vayemar Hashem Moshe, Hine Enochi Bo Eilech Bo Av HaAnon." Now, the truth of the matter is that is not the entire pasuk. It's actually a very long pasuk. That is the first part of the pasuk, and that's what the Gemara is referring to as that. Even though it's a very long pasuk, that phrase would be a pasuk in and of itself. Okay, so that is the what he's saying is that we read it and we understand it as three separate psukim, because there is, if you read it all as one pasuk, I mean the pasuk, I'll just read it one time because it's a very long pasuk. It says, "Vayemar Hashem Moshe, Hine Anochi Bo Eilech Ba'av Hanon." That's the part that we have in our Gemara. Then the pasuk continues and says, "Ba'afor Yishma Ha'am Bedabri Imach." That's the second part, so to speak, of the pasuk. V'gam b'chol yaminu lo'olam. Sorry, v'gam b'chol yaminu lo'olam. That's actually part of that phrase also goes with the second part of the pasuk. And then there's a third part of the pasuk that says, "Vayaged Moshe Stivrei Ha'am El Hashem," and Moshe Rabbeinu told it back over to Hashem. Anyway, so we break it down into three parts of the pasuk because each one is interpreted and understood by itself, and that we don't have, so to speak, a cross from the beginning of the pasuk to the end of the pasuk. It's not one concept, even though in Navi it's written as one pasuk. Okay, so those are that finishes off that the concept of these are halacha l'moshe m'sinai. All of these things, you can't invent them on their own. They all have to come with the Masaira from Moshe Rabbeinu in order to understand how to read the pasuk correctly. Okay, then the Gemara continues with a new thing. Omer Rabbi Chama bar Chinino. Loi Hesher Moshe Rabbeinu only became rich Elami Psoiloson Shel Luchais, from the remaining ships of what was left over from the Luchais. Shenemar, because we know that Moshe Rabbeinu carved out the second Luchais. The first Luchais were created by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The second one, HaKadosh Baruch Hu asked Moshe Rabbeinu to go ahead and create. Shenemar, the pasuk says, Psol Lucha Shnei Luchais Avonim Kirishonim. Hashem said, go create for you. Go create a second set of luchos similar to the first one. But we darshan the word psolucha as psoiloson shelcha yehei. The psoilus, the extras, the pieces that come off the luchos when you're carving it out, that you get to keep. And since this was a very special and unique and expensive stone, all those extra carvings were, Moshe Rabbeinu was able to use them and to become very wealthy from them. Now, the Gemara continues. Summer of Yosef Rab Chanino. Originally, the plan was that Moshe Rabbeinu himself was going to receive the Torah and to keep it. Now, this is very difficult to Gemara to understand on its face, because clearly Moshe Rabbeinu the Torah wasn't going to be given only to Moshe Rabbeinu and not to us. So there are different mafarshim that explain what this is talking about, that it's either talking about Torah Shebaal Peh, or it's in other words, the deeper understanding, which is similar to what the maskana of the Gemara is. Or originally the plan was, of course, Klal Yisrael was going to be given the mitzvahs. We were given the mitzvahs on Har Sinai, but we weren't going to be able to do anything on our own. Meaning, every time we had a shiloh, we would have to go ask Moshe Rabbeinu and his children how to deal with something. I'll give you an example just to illustrate the point. If a person has a nega, and they want to know whether or not it's a nega, you have to go to the kohen. Now, you might be the biggest professor on the topic, and you might actually know, as a Yisrael, you might actually know what's a nega and what's not a nega. You might have spent enough time. But even so, you're only able to get the answer, and it only becomes, so to speak, chal, it only becomes a real thing after you speak to the kohen. Because it was given to kohanim. Only kohanim can paskin that topic. So the same idea, this is one of the mafarshims that say this, the same idea would be true by the explanation to the Torah and the mitzvahs, that it was given to Moshe Rabbeinu, that Moshe Rabbeinu, so to speak, would control, if for lack of a better word, would control what the right thing to do in the context of every mitzvah. Even though, of course, Klal Yisrael was commanded in the mitzvahs, Shenemar. Now, what is this concept? That's one pshat. The other pshat was the deeper Havana. There are different pshatim over here in what exactly was given to Moshe Rabbeinu, while we all understand that, of course, all of Klal Yisrael was given the quote-unquote the Torah, or at least the mitzvahs in the Torah. Shenemar, because the pasuk says, "Ksev lucha," says you should write it. And it also says psalucha. It's not the same pasuk. It's a different pasuk. But it also says psalucha. And we darshan ma psalucha and shocha. Just like Moshe Rabbeinu for himself was able to keep the psalus, the extras of the luchos af ksavon shocha. So to what's written will only be to you that Moshe Rabbeinu will get the tar. As I said, the difference could be Torah Shabbat versus Torah Shabbat Peh, that everything would stay in the family, Moshe Rabbeinu's family. However, the Gemara tells us the reality is Moshe Nieg Ba Toivas Ayin. Moshe Rabbeinu applied, he was very generous with it. V'nosna Li Yisrael. And he gave it to Klal Yisrael. He shared everything about the Torah, all the entire Torah. Whatever was supposed to be reserved for Moshe Rabbeinu shared that with Klal Yisrael. V'alo v'kosav Omer. And the pasuk, in fact, says, "Toiv ayin hu yivurach." The one who gives, who has a good ayin, the one who shares, he will be blessed. And this is again referring to Moshe Rabbeinu, who shared the Torah, the extras of the, so to speak, I'll call it the extras, for lack of a better term, the extras of the Torah with all of Klal Yisrael. However, so the Gemara again assumes that it was very reserved. Originally, the plan was for Moshe Rabbeinu. However, Masav Rav Chista now is going to ask a number of questions on whether that was really originally the plan, that it was going to only remain with Moshe Rabbeinu. It says in the pasuk, "Va'oisi tziva Hashem," that Hashem commanded me be'esahi at that time, "l'lamed eschem," to teach you. So we see the original plan was that Moshe Rabbeinu should teach the whole Torah to Klal Yisrael. So the Gemara answers, no, that's not how to read the pasuk. The way to read the pasuk is, "Va'oisi tziva Hashem commanded to me." V'ani lochem, and I decided to give it to you. Not that the commandment was that I should give it to you. The commandment was to me. But I decided to give it to you. Similar, same idea. The Gemara says in the next pasuk, Rei lamadati eschem, chukum mishpatim, kasher tzivani Hashem elokai. So once again we say, see, here are the chukum mishpatim of the Torah, like Hashem commanded me. So it seems the simple reading of the pasuk is that Hashem commanded me to show it to you. So once again the Gemara says, no, oisi tziva, that Hashem commanded me, meaning that it was supposed to be commanded just for me. Ba'ani lechem, but now I'm showing it to you what Hashem had originally planned and just given to me. Another third pasuk, the same idea. Va'ata kisvu lachem es hashira hazois. I should write the shira for you. So we see that it was originally, the original plan was that the shira should be shared with Klal Yisrael. The Gemara answers, hashira l'chuda. You're right. This one I'll give. This one was true. This shira was originally meant to be shared with all the Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael also has this concept of an obligation to sing shira and praise to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That is something that was initially shared. Regardless of what the original plan was with the rest of the Torah, for shira, it was supposed to be shared with all of Klal Yisrael. But lastly, the Gemara says no. The Gemara has one more pasuk that doesn't fit with this concept. The pasuk says Laman Tiali Hashira Hazois, that there should be, I should have this shira la'ed b'vnei Yisrael, that should be a testimony for all of Klal Yisrael. Now the problem with this pasuk is that how is it an aid? How does this help for all of Klal Yisrael? This shira should be a representative of the whole Torah if the rest of the Torah wasn't shared with Klal Yisrael. So it must be, if this shira was supposed to represent all of the Torah, so it must be that Klal Yisrael had, it doesn't make sense that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would have given the shira to Moshe Rabbeinu not to share if this is supposed to be representative to all of Klal Yisrael. Must be that the Klal Yisrael had the entire Torah, was connected to the entire Torah, and the shira therefore becomes, and now the pasuk is saying something that the shira said, that the shira now becomes representative or an outlet for all of the Torah. So, what do we mean when we say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was originally planning on only giving it to Moshe Rabbeinu? So the Gemara answers, you're right, Ela Pilpuloi Ba'alma. Pilpuloi Ba'alma, now there's again different ways we can translate the pilpul. We know in yeshiva what we mean when we say pilpul. You know, we're talking, we're discussing, but it means more than that. It means, the way the Mepharshim learn, is Pilpuloi Ba'alma means the deriving one halacha from another halacha. In other words, to be able to compare one, to say, well, if this is the halacha in that context, and our case is similar in certain respects, or the important parts of the similar are similar, so I'm able to derive one halacha from another halacha. That's the pilpul. So originally that was supposed to be meant and to be reserved for Moshe Rabbeinu and only his family. However, that is, even that, Moshe Rabbeinu shared with Klal Yisrael, that now all of Klal Yisrael was zoicha to get the full depth of the Torah. Rabbi Yochanan, Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mashar Shechinasai, HaKadosh Baruch Hu only leaves his Shechina, Ella Al Gibor, somebody who's powerful, strong, the Usher, rich, Chacham, he's smart, the Anav, and he's also, with all that, and the Mepharshim do point out, that with all that, he's still an Anav. Even though, you know, you have all the things, and you have everything to brag about, and you're still able to understand that that's not really your power, it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu who gave you those powers in order to be able to, in this case, serve Klal Yisrael, and still you're an Anav, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, okay, I can share my Shechina with you. The Kulam and Moshe, and all of these things we learn out from the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu had them, and he was an Anav. Gibor, how do we know Moshe Rabbeinu was strong? Desiv, Vayifreish is oil ala Mishkan, that Moshe Rabbeinu was able to put the coverings on the Mishkan, which, by himself. Amar Mar, as the Gemara says, Mar says, as we learned, Moshe Rabbeinu Parsoi, that Moshe Rabbeinu himself did it, that even though the Mishkan was very tall, and, you know, the pieces of the Mishkan were very heavy, Moshe Rabbeinu was able to do it himself. And Vixiv, Eser Amis Orech HaKeresh, as each beam in the Mishkan was 10 amos high. So it's interesting the way the Ran learns is that the fact that it was so big, just by definition, if you're that big, you're 10 amos tall, you're a big guy. So he must have been a very strong guy. To which the Gemara says, not necessarily, it could be that he was this tall, lanky type of guy that wasn't necessarily so strong. He just happened to be very tall, but doesn't really necessarily prove that he was a strong, powerful guy. Now, the Gemara says, you're right. Elam and Adin cross, let's bring a different pasuk to Chsiv. Ve'etvois b'shnei haluchois, v'ashli chem me'al shtei yodai, v'ashperem. That's the pasuk, which means I held on to the two luchois, and I threw them from my hands, and I broke them. Now, the luchos were very, incredibly heavy. The Tanya, and we learned in the Braisa, how big were the luchos? The luchos, Orgon, Shisha, they were six tvachim long, Verachman, Shisha, and six tvachim wide, Ve'oivan, Shloisha, and the thickness of it was three tvachim thick, which, and as a sapphire, or whatever type of stone it was, that's an incredibly heavy piece of stone for Moshe Rabbeinu to be able to hold them, and not only hold them, but to be able to throw them, shows that Moshe Rabbeinu obviously was very strong. Asher, how do we know Moshe was rich? Because Psalacha, from the drasha we said before, that Hashem told him to make the luchos, Psalosan, Shelcha, Yehei, that he got to keep all the extra pieces, the chips, off the luchos, so that made him very wealthy. Chacham, how do we know that he was a Chacham? Rav and Shmuel, because both, the Amri Tarbah, both Rav and Shmuel tell us, Chamishim Sharei Bino, Nivru, Ba'olam, there are really 50 different gates, different levels of understanding in the world. The Kulan Lois Nasnu LaMoshe, and all of them were given to Moshe Chaser Achas, except for one. So Moshe Rabbeinu had 49 out of the 50 levels of Chachma. Shenemar, the Tachsaruhu Ma'at Me'elokim. That he was missing a little bit from Hashem. There's different ways to learn, understand this pasuk. Either Hashem reserved one thing about him, or that Moshe Rabbeinu was missing one aspect of the understanding of the Havana of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In any event, Moshe Rabbeinu had 49 out of 50, which is pretty good, so obviously he was very smart. Anav, he was an Anav, he was modest. Dechsiv, of course, this is everybody knows this. Dechsiv, Ayesh Moshe, Anav, Ma'id. Moshe Rabbeinu was the ultimate Anav in the world. He was able to understand and appreciate with all his greatness that he had, that it was all HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he was just a conduit, and it had nothing to do with him. Could have been anybody else that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was willing to give these powers to, and then they would be Moshe Rabbeinu. So that's the way Moshe Rabbeinu thought about it. Of course, there's no question that Moshe Rabbeinu, of course, worked on it and made it feasible. I mean, there are a lot of people with gifts that they squander, but Moshe Rabbeinu worked on it. The point is, he didn't take any credit for himself. He understood that it was all from Hashem. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, kol neviim ashirim hayu. The truth of the matter is, all neviim had to be rich. Minolon, how do we know this? Now, this applies to all neviim, but we're going to use certain examples. Mi Moshe, mi Shmuel, mi Amos, umi Yoina. We're going to use these four examples because they're psukim that prove the point that they were wealthy, and so too all the neviim were wealthy. And part of this is that you don't want the navi to be influenced by anything else. It should only be independent, that he should be able to relate directly to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Moshe, Nechsev, as we said, okay, so how do we know Moshe Rabbeinu was wealthy? So this is what we discussed before. I never had to take someone else's donkey to carry anything, to get around from one place to the other. If we're talking about that Moshe Rabbeinu was wealthy because he didn't have to pay for it, or that he would take things without paying for it, So Moshe Rabbeinu is great because he's like the guys who take things for free. That doesn't make you a wealthy person. That's usually not a good thing. That Moshe Rabbeinu, I didn't even need to borrow something from someone else, even to pay for it. I never needed to, because I had everything on my own. The Gemara says, well, there's another way we can look at this. Maybe the reason why he never took anybody else's things is because he couldn't afford it. Maybe it was because he wasn't rich. He didn't have enough money to borrow these things. So you're right. So that doesn't prove that Moshe Rabbeinu was wealthy. Once again, back to the original pasuk, that Kodesh Baruch Hu told him that he could take the extra psoiloson, yehei shel cho. The psoilos, the extra from the luchais, Moshe Rabbeinu was able to keep, and that's how he got wealthy. Shmuel d'chsiv, how do we know that Shmuel was wealthy? Because it says, hinini onubi, they said about me, neged Hashem in front of Hashem, I'm going to answer in front of Hashem, neged Mashichoi, and in his shliach, eshor mi lukachti, did I ever take eshor b'chamor mi lukachti, did I ever take anything from anybody else? Now once again, ibechinom. So once again, if he's saying I never took anything for free, so what? This is better than people who take things when they're not supposed to for free. That doesn't make you rich, and that doesn't make you impressive. The point is that even I didn't even have to take. I didn't even need it. I didn't even never even needed to borrow it for payment. Dilma. So once again, Dilma the Ani happened. Maybe the reason why he never took anything, and Shmuel we know was a Navi that traveled around a lot, and the fact that he never took anything from anybody was maybe because he couldn't afford it. So the Gemara answers, you're right, same thing. I have a different pasuk. I went back to Ramosa. Kishom, basically, that was his house. Okay, so what was so great about being that's with his house? But Amar Rava, what it really means to say is not that he lived in the Rama. What rather it means to say is Komokum Shalach Beisayimoy, that he was able to bring everything with him, that he always had, that he was so wealthy that he always had enough supplies wherever he was, even when he traveled, he brought everything with him. Amar Rava. Okay, so that is the raya that Shmuel was wealthy. Now the Gemara says, Amar Rava. That the way Shmuel was able to relate to people and not taking animals was and not borrowing from people was even greater than Moshe Rabbeinu not taking from people. Why? By Moshe Rabbeinu it says that I never took a donkey from anybody. That means and we darshan dafilu b'schar, and he never even had to rent. I never had the need to rent anything from anybody. The ilugabe Shmuel, but by Shmuel it says afilu b'rotzoin loy sachrot. He didn't even take it when the person wanted to give it to him. The person was like, "Listen, take it. I want you to use it. I want you to use it." And still Shmuel says, "No, I don't have a need for it." D'chsev ayomer loy ashaktani v'loy ritzosoni ritzosnu. And I didn't even take it when they wanted to. And the reason why Shmuel didn't do this is because even when the person said, "Sure, I want you to use my object," he was always afraid that the person was saying, "I want you to use it," because they were embarrassed to say no. They were embarrassed not to give it to him. So he was afraid to take it from them because they really, maybe deep down, didn't really want to give it to him. Moshe Rabbeinu, on the other hand, at least from the psukim, that's what the Gemara is darshaning, didn't necessarily refuse when a person told them, "Hey, I want to give it to you," and maybe Moshe Rabbeinu's case, I mean, think about how great it was. Imagine if you were able to say, "I gave Moshe Rabbeinu something." You know how great that would make you feel? Yeah. So therefore Moshe Rabbeinu, maybe that was the cheshbon that he had. Okay, continuing on this vein of how do we know that the Nevi'im were rich? Amos, how do we know that Amos was rich? Dechsiv, Vayan Amos Vayomer L'Amatzia. That he answered Amatzia. What happened was Amatzia actually said to Amos, why are you taking from people, you're needing for other people. So Amos answered Amatzia and he said, Loi Navi Anoichi, Loi Ben Navi Anoichi. First of all, I'm not so great. Ki Boiker Anoichi. I'm just a regular shepherd. Uboiles Shekamim, and I have fields. Now, what does this mean? Because the Matar game, Rabbi Yosef explained what that means is, first of all, I'm a shepherd. That's where I am. Vishkamim libishfelta. But just so that you know, I have a meadow. I have trees in a different place. What he was saying is like this. I'm a real estate mogul. I really have plenty of money. I don't need anything over here. I do this this is what you see, but this is not really where my money is. This is not, I'm independently wealthy. So we see that Amos said, Beferish Tamatia, I don't need anything from anybody. I have my own money. Yoinu Dechsev, how do we know Yoinu was rich? This is maybe more famous. Vayitein Schara Vayared Ba, that Yoinu paid for the boat and then he went on the boat. What is this talking about? When he was running away? When his original plan was to run away. He paid for the entire boat. It says, and just so that you know, when we're talking about that he paid for the boat, we're talking about a big boat. He paid for a whole cruise liner. He paid 4,000 gold coins, which, even if I don't know how much money that is, I can't imagine, 4,000 gold coins has got to be a ton of money. It's a lot of money. Anyway, so the fact that he was able to pay for this, that shows that he had enough money, and he was very wealthy, and he was able to pay for something like that. So we see that he was wealthy. The reason, by the way, that he had to pay for it, the Mefarshim will say, is because when he originally, Yonah decided that he wanted to run, he wanted to go immediately. And the captain of the ship said, I didn't fill up. I didn't sell out yet, so I'm not going. I'm waiting till I filled up. So Yonah said, here, how much money are you going to make if you fill up? That's how much money it's going to cost you. I'll pay you for the entire ship. And he paid for the entire ship. This is fascinating. Originally, when Moshe Rabbeinu was learning the Torah, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu was teaching in the Torah, he couldn't retain everything. He couldn't remember it. Until eventually, HaKadosh Baruch Hu just gave it to him, just made it his, and he knew it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu just made him have it. Now, the literal translation is, and he gave it to Moshe when he finished speaking with him. So, for purposes of this Gemara, we're interpreting that to mean that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu was finished teaching Moshe Rabbeinu the Torah, he didn't know it. I mean, as you can imagine, it's not really humanly possible to know the entire Torah in 40 days, to learn the entire Torah in 40 days. This is something that it takes time to develop and to learn and to understand. So Moshe Rabbeinu, as smart as he was, the reality is that was not humanly possible. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to eventually give it to him. So the Mefarshim say, why was it necessary for this to happen to Moshe Rabbeinu? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have taught it to him in a way that he kind of remembered it as he went along. The answer is because this is an excuse for anybody else who says that I'm learning, I can't remember, I don't have a good head, and so on and so forth. We say, listen, the truth of the matter was, it was Moshe Rabbeinu also wasn't able to handle it. But he pushed. He pushed forward until eventually HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw the effort and the siyata d'shmaya, whatever, if you want to use that expression. Until eventually, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave it to him. And the truth of the matter is, there are some of our famous gedolim that we quote, and there's svarim that we learn that we're not necessarily the quote unquote smartest kids growing up. And eventually, their push and their effort, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave them the matana that they were able to succeed. So that's also an excuse. Okay, so Zakta Mishnah. Now this Mishnah is actually a continuation of the Mishnah beforehand. The Mishnah beforehand, as you may recall, was discussing when somebody makes a neder that I'm not going to give hanah to my friend, and there were certain things that the Mishnah beforehand listed that it was still mutter for them to do. For example, it was mutter for them to bring karbonos, it was mutter for them to take meiser, right? There are certain things that even though I made a neder, I'm not going to do for you, I'm not going to give you any hanah, there are certain things that are not quote-unquote in the category of hanah or are not included in your neder of hanah. Excuse me, and it's still mutter to do. So this Mishnah is a continuation and continues on that same vein. It says, Vizonis ishtoi ves bonov, and you can feed and support the wife and children of the person you made an eder to. So we'll see in the Gemara who made an eder exactly what, but let's just take the simple pshat as I told the person I'm not going to give him an oh, I could still give money to his wife in support of his wife. Now, afalpi, as the Mishnah itself says, afalpi shulchai b'mizonoisom, even though this guy, the husband, was obligated to support them, still someone else can step in and support them, even if he made a neder not to help him out. Now, it has to be, the Mefarshim say, it's very important that when you do this b'teiras mitzvah, meaning I'm not doing it as support for this guy's wife, I'm doing it because she needs tzedakah. For whatever reason, this husband's not supporting his wife properly, and I decide that I'm going to do it. Now, the Ran does say that we're talking about over here, this is very important for the Ran's pshat, for the Ran does say that we're talking about the extras, meaning I'm not giving her life support. It's not that if I didn't give her this apple, she was going to die. That's not what we're talking about over here. We're talking about, because every person, every human, as you know, you eat your basics, but every human also needs a little bit of extra taste and a little bit of extra this and that to live life. It's not, you know, you don't eat, even though the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says a person should just eat pas b'melach toichal, you should just eat bread and water. But the reality is that people, you know, when they're living, they live a little bit more. So the food that we're talking about over here is not to sustain her from life and death. The food that we're talking about over here is to enhance her living, her support. Okay, but again, the point is that when you give it, because there's an isra, no, you're giving it b'tayras mitzvah, not b'tayras support. And that's why it's going to be mutter. But again, we'll wait for the Gemara to add on to the explanation. Let's get into what the Mishnah is discussing. So even though it's mutter to support his wife, v'lo yozun es behem osoy, but you're not allowed to give food to his animals. Ben tamei ben tahira. Whether it's kosher animals or not kosher animals, if I say I'm not giving you hano, I'm not giving you benefit, I can't support your animals either. However, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, he says, no, it depends. Zonas hatamea, I can give your tame animals, because you don't really get anything out of it. Then is zonas hatar, but I can't support your kosher animals. Now, of course, immediately the chachamim amr loy ma ben tamei l'tahir. What's the difference? An animal's an animal. You'd have to support that you're not paying for their lunch. So amr lehen. So Rabbi Eliezer answered, shat tahir nafshel l'shamayim v'gufa shaloy. Let's just say the pashup shat is that the body itself, the life and death belongs to Hashem. However, you get the guf, meaning that you'll, since it's a kosher animal, you can eventually shecht it and eat it. And if the animal is fattening up, and by the way, this is the Ran's raya that we're talking about, the extra, because we're talking about fattening the animal, we're not talking about life and death. So since you get the benefit of that, that's why I'm not allowed to support you. Shalai, the tamea, but when we're talking about a tame animal now, we're on the top of Lamechesim Abeis. Nafsha v'gufa l'shamayim, there, both the soul, meaning the life and death, and also the fat, the guf, even if the animal dies, or shechts, you're not going to be able to eat it. So you don't get any direct benefit from this animal. That's why it's okay for me, even with the mudar ano, to support your tamei animal. You're not kosher animal. However, amru loy, but the chachamim answered, I don't understand why. It's not only about eating. Even a not kosher animal, you do have a benefit from the animal, from the fatness of the animal. First of all, if it's a fattened animal, you could sell it to a guy, and the fatter the animal is, the plumper the animal is, you're going to get a better price. So you are benefiting from it financially. And also, even if you're not going to sell it, but you can give it to your dog, or a dog, and you can use it as feed for other animals. The point is that, and it, once again, it makes a difference how fat or big or large the animal is. So we see that it does make a difference, and therefore, according to the Chachamim, there's no distinction between a kosher animal and not kosher animal, whether you're going to get a beneficial hana from it, a monetary beneficial hana, so therefore it's going to be awesome. Okay, now, that's the Mishnah. So let's learn the Gemara to talk about what exactly this case is, that one is, even though he made an eder, he's able to support the other person's wife. What's the case? Amar Rav Yitzchak bar Chananya, Amar Rav Huna. So he says, so Rav Yitzchak is going to tell us the case is like this. Hamudar hano mechaveroi. So, of course, we're going to bring another case to establish what's going on over here. When somebody makes hano, I'm not going to give you hano. Mutar lohasi loy bitoy. So it still can marry his daughter. So once again, guy says to Reuven, I'm not giving you, Reuven, any hano. He's still able, that same person is able to marry Reuven's daughter. Now, let's figure out why this is true. Havei bar Rav Zeira. Rav Zeira was wondering about this. But my askina, what exactly are we talking about over here? What's the case and why is it mutter? So if we're discussing that the father, this Reuven guy, it's Reuven's daughter, right? So if Reuven is not allowed to give any benefit to the chosin. So this is very interesting. It's the way the way I saw, at least in the notes, that it doesn't mean that he necessarily gives him a shivcha. It doesn't necessarily. We're talking about they have like the gears of kishivcha l'shamshoy. It's as if he's giving him a shivcha l'shamshoy. Meaning, the daughter is going to give him the benefit, and just giving him the wife to be able to take care of his needs is giving him a benefit. It doesn't mean, so first I understood, I think the Ran learns a little differently. The Ran learns that we're talking about that it's a young girl, and she won't be able to support herself, she won't be able to take care of herself, so she needs a nanny, she needs a maid to be able to take care of her. So the father, when he marries off his daughter, is going to have to give a maid. That's the way the Ran seems to learn. But the Mefarshim learn a little bit differently. It's like, it's not literally giving her a maid. It's rather, I'm giving you the service of a maid. By giving you a wife, by giving you the girl that you're marrying, you now have somebody to take care of you, and that's giving you a benefit that you now have somebody taking care of you. So if it would be usher for the father-in-law to give the son-in-law anything, absolutely anything, so giving him a girl to even though it's his wife, but to give him a girl to help him out is giving him something. So it would be usher. So that cannot be the case. Rather, Ella. So here's the case. B'nichsei chosin asurin alavi. Kalo. So rather, the one who made the neder was the chosin said, I'm not giving you Reuven, the father, I'm not giving you anything. So then the chiddush is that it's mutter because he's giving the father. Now, in the Havamina of the Gemara, is that we think we're talking about a katana, we think we're talking about a little girl, and that means that in order to marry her, he had to give her kedushin. So he had to give the father the money, the $100 for the kedushin, so he's definitely giving the father something, and even so, it's going to be mutter. But if that's the case, and then the chiddush would be that's considered mutter because that's not an extra benefit or anything like that. But if that's the chiddush, then now we get Tar Mishnah. G'dayilam yizu amru. We said even more than that. It says zonas ishtoi ves banov, that if a person makes a neder, he's able to support the guy's wife and children. Even though that guy was responsible to pay for his own wife and pay for his own children, and still it was mutter for the person who said, I'm not giving you anot, to give him that support. And here he's not even getting anything from it. I'm literally just giving you money for your daughter, or giving your daughter money. And still it was mutter. So certainly over here where I'm getting something, where I'm paying for the kedushin, that it should be mutter. And you're going to tell me a chiddush that it's mutter to marry his daughter? Of course it's mutter to marry his daughter. You're paying for, that's a transaction. Of course it's going to be mutter. So the Gemara says, you're right. So that's not the case. Well, rather it's still the case. You're right. So just to point out that is the Rosh's pshat. The Ran learns a little bit differently. The Ran says it was the fact that that I'm giving the father, right, so the fact that I'm marrying, the way the Ran learns is the fact that I'm marrying this girl, I'm relieving the father from his obligation from having to support her. Exactly. So now, I am giving him a benefit, because until now he was spending money on his daughter. Now he doesn't have to spend the money on his daughter. So now, the Gemara's Kol Shekein also is very easy to read, but it says if the halacha was that even when you had to support her, I gave you the money directly to support her, so certainly, and that was mutter, so certainly when I'm taking her off your hands, well, you don't have a chiyuv to support her anymore. Certainly it should be mutter for me to relieve you of that obligation. When I literally am relieving you on an ongoing basis, it's mutter. Certainly to relieve you to marry her so that you don't have that obligation should certainly be mutter. So what would be the chiddush in this idea that you're able to marry her? So the Gemara says, you're right. Let's go back to our original case, that it was that the father was usher to give the chosin. And until now, we assumed that it was a young girl. The truth of the matter is, rather, we're talking about an older girl, and she's already on her own, amidaita. So again, once again, you have a lot of mefarshim, a lot of different rishonim that bring different pshatim. The Ran himself brings two pshatim, what we're talking about, what midaita is. But the simple pshat is that since this girl is older, she's making her own decisions. She herself is deciding to get married, and she herself, by the way, is also receiving the money of the kedushin, and that's why it's mutter. So the chiddush is, you're right, that even though I made a neder that I'm not going to give the father any, I know I'm marrying the daughter when the daughter is independent, so to speak, of the father, that is going to be completely mutter because you don't have to interact with the father. That's the first pshat in the Ran. The second pshat in the Ran is a similar idea, that midaita means that you've been negotiating the marriage not directly from the chosin, and the father-in-law are not negotiating directly, but rather they made a shliach in between that was talking directly to the girl about deciding to get married. And that's what, once again, that's why it's going to be mutter. The point is that there was no discussion between the father-in-law and now the new son-in-law. So the fact that the daughter herself arranged the marriage without the involvement of her father, so now it's not considered as if the father, so to speak, gave her away in marriage. The father's not giving anything to the chosen. Okay, then the Gemara continues, Tanya Nami Yochi, we learned in a brisa similar, Hamudar Hano Mechaveiroi, if I make an eder not to give any benefit to him, Asul Asiloi Bitoi, I can't marry his daughter. So we see that if whatever pshat you're going to learn, that I'm giving the father direct benefit, that would be aser. But if you're doing it when she's already older and it's on her own, either, whatever, the point is that she's doing it on her own, so even though you made a neder with the father-in-law, there's a problem between the father-in-law and the son-in-law, but if it's directly between the chosin and the kala, that's not going to be a problem, even though the father of the kala is getting the benefit. That indirect benefit is not going to be usur. Okay, let's finish off the Gemara here. Amar Rav Yaakov, Hamadar Benoi L'Talmud Torah. So there are different pshatim over here, but let's take the Ran's pshat. Somebody makes a neder that he's not going to give any hanot to his son unless he's learning. He's not going to take any benefit from his son, so that his son will sit and learn. So you're allowed, again, there's two ways you can learn this, but let's learn the pshat that even though I said I'm not going to give him anything, it's still mutter for me to give him water, ulahadlik loiner, and to light a candle. Or you could say the other way around. I'm not going to take, the way the Ran learns is, I'm not going to take any benefit from my son, so that he's not busy taking care of me, so he has all the time in the world to be able to sit and learn. Still, even when I said that, and I don't want him to do anything, what I really mean, I don't mean the little things. The little things like filling up a cup and lighting a candle for me, those things were never included in my neder, because those won't take him away from his learning. I meant the big things that are going to distract him. That's what I meant that I don't want him to do. Rabbi Yitzchok Omer, Litzlais Loidog Katan. Rabbi Yitzchok says it goes one step further. He can even cook a little fish for him, which is again something that the Gemara itself in many places considers something very easy and quick. Amar Rabbi Yirmiyahu, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Amudar No Mechaveiroi. Once again, even if I make a neder that I'm not going to give you any benefit, Mutar Lahashkoisoi Kois Shal Shalom. He's able to give him a peace offering of a drink. Ma'iniu, the Gemara itself explains, what is this Kois Shal Shalom? Hocha Targime, over here they explained it to me in Kois Shal Beis Oval, in a Beis Oval. So even if I said I'm not going to give you anything, in a Beis Oval, it is mutter for him to give him a cup of wine. But Marova Amri ben Nener, in Marova they used to say Kois Shal Beis Amerchatz, that they used to give him a cup in the Beis Amerchatz. So once again, it's one of two things. Either this was a place that they used to make treaties and make peace among themselves, or simply because it's very hot and a person needs a drink. So you're, again, it's a little thing. It's that kind of little thing was never included in the neder. That's the takeaway from this Gemara. That even when a person makes a neder that he's not going to give any ano whatsoever, he doesn't mean these little things that you would do without even thinking about it type of things. That's going to be mutter. Okay, and now the last little Gemara, we'll just do the three more lines before the Mishnah, and then we'll stop over there. The Gemara then continues, V'lo yazan es behemosai, and then we have this machlekes Rabbi Eliezer and the Chacham, and whether or not it's permitted to feed this person's animals. Meaning, I made a neder, I'm not going to give you ano. Is it mutter to feed the animals or not? So, everybody agrees you can't feed the kosher animals. The question, the machlekes was about the tamei animals. Tanya Rabbi Yeshua ish uza oimer, Rabbi Yeshua ben ish uza toras, zon avoda v'shvchasav haknanim. You could feed the servants, v'loyazonas behemosai, but you cannot give anything to the animals, ben tam and ben tar. Tanya, whether it's kosher or not kosher, you certainly cannot feed the animals at all. So this is going according to the Chacham Shita, but you can still give the servants. My taima, avoda v'shvchasav of Kananim Liman Kharusa of Dinon. So for the slaves, Liman Kharusa, so this again it depends on what the girsa over here is, but the point is if a slave dies you're not going to eat them. So you don't really get any benefit, whether again according to the Ran Shita that we're talking about the extra fattening them up, you don't get anything extra out of him being fat. Whereas an animal is supposed to be fattened up. So there would be a difference between the difference between the animals and the slaves, even though both of them, so to speak, are your property and you benefit from the fact that I don't have to give them a meal. But the difference is by the animal is getting fattened up and now you have a fattened animal, so that makes it, that's better for you. Whereas by a slave, the fattening up doesn't help you at all, because the slave is meant to serve you, and if they're fat, they're not going to. It's two things: either that you don't get anything extra from the fact that they're fat, or if anything, it's worse. When they're fat, they get lazy, and then they don't. And they don't serve you well. So therefore, that's why it's mutter to give the shivcha, because you get no benefit from the fact that they're getting this extra food. Okay, we'll stop over here. We'll pick up from the Mishnah next time.